This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Also, a heads up, there's a lot, I mean a lot of diet talk in this movie. Today, we're going over Romeo and Michelle's high school reunion.
Woo! Yay!
So, if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want to pass on this one and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready?
One dry kiss. Oh, I said it faster than you that time. Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-com movies, where every week we cover one movie. This week we're doing the April Fool's theme, and we've got the perfect movie. Almost as perfect as Fools Rush In, Romy and Romy and Michelle's high school reunion. And I am here with somebody I happen to also go to high school with for a short period of time, Corinne Edding, my co-host.
Well, we never went to high school together, but we did.
We didn't?
No, we went to middle school
It
together.
Was middle school. Yeah. Oh, my God. You were in high school in my heart then. You were in my heart in high school.
Same. And I am here, I would say, with the Romy to my Michelle. But I kind of feel like we aren't anything like them whatsoever, except for our enduring friendship, Miss Tamara Cosio.
It's true. I was doing that thing the whole movie. I'm like, am I the Romy or the Michelle? No, not her. No, not her either. Oh. I'm the Heather Mooney. I'm totally the Heather Mooney.
That's who I was thinking too. I was like, well, if I were going to pick one person in this movie, then I would like, it would be Heather Mooney.
And thankfully, we included her in the storyline, so you will meet her very, very soon. And I just have one glaring thing to say at the top of the show. Larry is no longer allowed to listen to this podcast.
Oh, why is that?
Because first of all, he wanted me to inform you that when you sang Bon Jovi's I'll Be There For You, that you got it wrong.
I don't care.
So he thought it was so hilarious because you were singing, I'll be there for you. These three words I say to you when you breathe. I want to be the air for you. It's five words. It's five words I say to you. I will be there for you, or I'll be there for you.
I'll be there for you. Yeah.
He's like, that's why it says these five words. He's like, it's five. It's not. And I was like, okay, Larry, great. Thanks. Thanks a lot. I'll make sure I tell Corinne at the top of the show. Very important information.
You can tell me.
And then to punctuate the point, he put my head in his hands and he kissed my lips. And then he turned my head and he kissed my cheek and then he fluffed my neck down and he kissed my forehead meaningfully. And I was like, you motherfucker. And then he laughed about it. And I was like, forehead kisser. You gosh darn forehead kisser. That's enough. That's enough. You are not the unofficial third member of this podcast episode.
Guess what I was doing before recording this podcast?
Organizing your apartment.
No, although I was folding some clothes. I started watching the first half hour of Romy and Michelle, in the beginning.
Oh, no.
Starring Katherine Heigl and Alexandra Breckenridge. And for reasons that I cannot understand. Okay, one, this is an ABC Family movie, and I've watched several ABC Family movies that have been of varying quality. This is horrible. This movie is one of the worst movies that I've ever seen.
Oh.
Also, Katherine Heigl, would you think of her more as a Romy, who is played by Mira Sorvino, or a Michelle, who's played by Lisa Kudrow?
Romy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I think of her as Michelle all the way. If nothing else, because she looks like way more closer to Lisa Kudrow than she does to Romy. She's blonde, she's got long hair, she's
I don't know what the Breckenridge girl looks like, so
she looks like a person.
Great description. I could picture her now. I think I'm just thinking about Katherine Heigl's previous roles where she was kind of like more maybe I'm thinking of her like One for the Money, where she's kind of a ball buster. Is that her movie?
Yeah, that is a movie. This is
Okay, if I saw that, then I'd say she's a Michelle. If I saw the other gal.
Yeah.
Okay. But just Katherine Heigl knowing who she is without any reference to the other person, I would say she could be a Romy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we're going to get in a pillow fight now. Are we going to scratch each other's eyes out?
Yes. We're going to have to get Larry involved. I mean, no, he's not allowed to be involved in this podcast. No, never mind. Forget it. I forget I said anything about Larry. No.
So it's a definite watcher then is what you're saying. Oh, to check out that Romy and Michelle the Beginning one as soon as we finish.
I was like, you know what? Next week, I think I got to cover that movie because I was just like Romy and Michelle's high school reunion or.
No.
Romy and Michelle in the Beginning, which covers the time when they go to L.A. from high school. Mm. So they graduate and they have $60 saved up so that they can go to L.A. But they just need a little bit more money. So they're like, oh, that'll take us a few weeks. And then 3 years later, they're still working. But now they have $68. So they go to the movie theater and they see Pretty Woman. Huh? Yeah.
Ah.
And this inspires them to go to L.A. Because if Julia Roberts can do it in Pretty Woman, then they too can make their own way just like Julia Roberts could.
They're going to be sex workers?
Yeah, sex workers. So this ABC Family movie then has them, Romy and Michelle, in L.A. dressed up in Pretty Woman sex working outfits, walking the stroll, talking to a couple of sex workers, being like, how much do you charge? And
you can't cover that movie because I refuse to watch it already. No, I'm vetoing it. I'm vetoing it so hard. Do not put that in the rotation. Do not make me watch that.
I was blown away by the variety of things that I saw in that movie.
I already pressed the ejection button when you said they go and be sex workers. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Because it doesn't seem like much happened to them between, well, we'll get into like their story, their current story. I don't think I want to get into their origin story at all.
Well, I mean, I was wondering how they got a fucking beachfront apartment that they were living in. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that yawn signals that we should get started. Corinne, do you have a synopsis?
That yawn signaled that I didn't write my synopsis. Just a second. I need to.
Oh, God.
I know. My day was bananas, and I almost forgot to do this movie entirely. Fortunately, in the afternoon, I knocked it out, except I forgot to do the synopsis. However, I'm just going to kind of do a read/improv of the existing IMDb one. So.
What, Corinne? You forgot to do the synopsis?
Yes. Yes, I did. I forgot to do the synopsis. I had a lot going on in my life. Synopsis.
That's it. You're grounded. You don't get to do the podcast for 3 weeks.
Okay, so I can't wait for you to do all the... Oh, is Larry going to be replacing me? Was this your plan all along? I see how it is. So this synopsis is a combination of the genius of me and the genius of IMDb. Two dim-witted, inseparable friends hit the road for their 10-year high school reunion and concoct an elaborate lie about their lives in order to impress their classmates. First dim-witted friend is Michelle, played by Lisa Kudrow. Second dim-witted friend is Romy, played by Mira Sorvino. And this movie is an exploration of friendship and the overarching goals of our lives. Will Romy and Michelle, when they go to this reunion, reign triumphant and become the queen and queen of the reunion? Will Romy and Michelle concoct such an elaborate web of lies that everybody thinks that they are disco dancers that have come back from the past into the future that's now the present? Keep those listening ears listening to find out.
What? Wow, Corinne, that was so well rehearsed and researched. Uh-huh. I couldn't even.
I know, right? I knocked amazing. Your socks off, right?
Sure did.
Uh-huh. Hair flip. So, Miss Tamara, are you ready to kick off our journey of Romy and Michelle and their high school reunion?
I forgot to do the outline.
Oh, that's good, because you had to do a script instead, so I hope that you did the script.
I am ready.
Woo-hoo.
Ready to reunite with Romy and Michelle. We open on a small apartment that faces Venice Beach, Los Angeles. Inside, Romy, played by Mira Sorvino, and Michelle, played by Lisa Kudrow, are laying on their side-by-side twin beds, watching the movie Pretty Woman. It's the part of the movie where Julia Roberts gets kicked out of the Rodeo Drive boutique, and Romy adds commentary for her bestie, Michelle. Oh, boo-hoo. They won't let her shop. It's not like those Rodeo Drive sales clerks aren't bigger whores than her. Michelle giggles until the part where Julia gets the hotel manager to cater to all her shopping needs and catches her breath. Romy looks at her inquisitively, and Michelle explains, I just get really happy when they finally let her shop.
Aww.
Later that night, the girls are rifling through their very full closet, complaining that they have nothing to wear, and Michelle adds, and I don't even have time to make anything. They finally choose their going-out outfits. Romy's wearing a tight red pleather jacket over a leopard print bustier and a pleather miniskirt, and Michelle has on a shimmery teal dress with a diamond pattern overlay in rhinestones and a matching jacket with ostrich feather trim.
Ooh.
Romy strikes a pose in the full-length mirror and says, I can't believe how cute I look. Michelle joins her and agrees, yeah, I think this is the cutest we've ever looked. Romy nods, smiling. Aren't you glad we can say that to each other and we know we're not being conceited? Michelle straightens her dress and says, no, we're just being honest. And they make their way out to their regular neighborhood nightclub. The music pulses around them as they shout, I hope there's cute guys here tonight. There was cute ones last night. But after a quick survey of the room, they decide there are not any cute guys. So the girls resign to dance with each other, which turns into a cute choreographed routine. Romy skips around her friend and bemoans, God, I wish I was a lesbian sometimes. Michelle, unperturbed, asks, do you want to have sex sometime to see if we are? Romy scoffs, ugh. No, the thought of having sex with a woman skeezes me out. She pauses for a moment, then adds, but if we're still single by the time we're 30, ask me again. And Michelle nods, okay.
Which is a mere, like, 2 years off, basically, for them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
When I first watched that movie, I'm like, oh, that's a good wait. You guys are, like, 28.
Yeah. So. Also, I gotta say, their room setup, like, they have these twin beds that have, like, an aisle between them. But there's no, like, partition or anything like that. Are they just badonkadonking? Look, I'm all for a good friendship movie with friendship vibes. I feel like, I'm not sure if these women are ace or if Michelle is a lesbian and Romy is ace. Or if, you know, what is going on with their friendship. But I feel like their friendship is within an exclusion of other outer relationships.
Corinne always brings it back to the sex. How are they sleeping with guys if they have twin beds right next to each other with no partition? I love that that's the first place your head goes.
Look, priorities, okay? You gotta have the privacy for the nook. Just saying.
I don't know. They almost seem like asexual. Like,
yeah.
I mean, they're looking for guys, but I can't imagine them like putting a sock on the door per se and being like, don't come home. I've got company.
That's why I said I was wondering if they were ace, because that's like asexual, where you're just like, you're not really necessarily romantically interested in people, generally speaking. Sometimes you can kind of have a romance, but it's like, it's not quite like it is for other people. And I feel like their friendship is the primary relationship that they want.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that, yeah.
But it's not sexual at all between them.
No.
No.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed, yeah. Agreed, agreed. What was I going to say? Oh, speaking of lesbians, did you get a chance to watch that or listen to that Handsome podcast that I recommended?
Oh my God, no. Bad friend. I've been listening to any podcast. I haven't even been listening to I Think Not, which is the one podcast that I'm listening to right now, which I think that Joey and Ellen are fantastic and hilarious, and I hold a special place for them in my heart. And I loved their live show so much that we saw.
You did say your life was banana sauce, so much so that you didn't do the outline. So I can imagine that you didn't have time to listen to the podcast I recommended.
Okay, but it's called Handsome? Handsome. I got it right here. I am downloading Lisa Kudrow. Oh, my God. Downloading the Lisa Kudrow episode.
Yep. It all ties in. It all ties in.
It all comes together. Oh my gosh.
If you like Lisa Kudrow, listen to her question on the Hanson podcast, because Lisa Kudrow's in this movie and on their show.
I'm so excited. I also love that show that she's in where she plays this washed up actress. I wasn't talking about Friends. I love that obscure show that she was in where there were like a lot of people living in really large apartments in New York that The Comeback.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
That's good. But on to the next day.
I hated her in Easy A. Just saying that. Okay, continue.
I don't remember her in Easy A. Oh.
She was the guidance counselor that was sleeping with a married man and kind of bitchy. Bitchy's not a good look on Lisa Kudrow. I don't know why.
I feel like there's kind of like an undertone of bitch to her always. So I don't know. I mean that in a loving way,
though. No, bitchy
like
a bad person, yeah. Bitchy. Yeah. Like doing bad things to people to hurt their feelings.
Oh, no. The next day, Romy is at her job. She's the cashier at a posh Jaguar dealership service desk. Wow, she must be raking in that money working at this place. There's a long line of customers, which I'm not criticizing her job. It's just how they manage to exist in the world. I'm not sure how they do it with the income that they have. That's all. There's a long line of customers in front of her, and she's calling out, 243, order 243. By the way, your Romy is amazing. And I kept on trying to do a Romy, could not do a Romy to save my life. I was like practicing while I was watching the movie and listening and trying to do it. No. And you know what I thought to myself? I thought, Tamara's going to be doing an amazing Romy, because there's certain people that I'm really good at imitating for some reason, and there's certain people that Tamara's really good at imitating, and they're do the twixt crossover. Like, somehow, yeah. You just have this, like, knack for certain voices, and I have knack for other certain voices.
Romy and sister fucking...
Oh my god, you were so good with that. It's sister act.
Sister Laser Eye. Laser Eye Lazarus.
Lazarus, yes.
Sister Laser Eye Lazarus and Romy White. Oh, those are my real wheelhouses, and I will drive in them all day.
Beautiful. So she's calling out 243 into the microphone that leads to the mechanic's office. After no response, Romy finally shouts, "Come on, Ramon, quit jacking off over there and bring the car around." Ramon, played by Jacob Vargas, quickly emerges, wielding keys. He looks Romy up and down and says, "You are looking hot today." She grabs the keys and says, "That's because the AC is broken and I'm sweating like a pig." He offers to let her cool down in the back where the AC is working just fine. But she blows him off, not in the sexy way, to help the next customer, who's in all black, sucking on a cigarette, saying curtly, "I'm in a real hurry." Romy picks up the service card and says, "Well, Heather Mooney, I'm going as fast as I can." Then Romy has a realization, breaks into a smile and repeats, "Heather Mooney from Sagebrush High?" The customer looks appalled as she peels off her black sunglasses and murmurs, "Yeah." Romy sits up brightly and cries, "It's me, Romy White. Wow, I didn't know you were in LA and you're driving a Jaguar. What are you doing here?" Heather holds up her cigarette and asks, and you can tell what time era this is because she is smoking all kinds of indoors in these places. And just like a year or two later, you couldn't do that. But she holds up her cigarette and asks, "Ever heard of Lady Fair cigarettes? I invented the quick burning paper. All the taste in half the time for that gal on the go." She takes a drag and half the cigarette practically burns down to the filter. Heather seems as if she wants to flee, but instead asks tersely, "So, are you going to the 10-year reunion?" Romy is astonished because she never got an invite. "Neither did I, Romy. It's okay." But asks if Heather's going, which causes her old classmate to hold up her cigarette and respond, "I'd rather put this out in my ass." Romy chuckles, then mumbles to herself, "I'm sure that Michelle would have told me if we got one in the mail," causing Heather's eyes to widen and say, "Michelle Weinberger? Do you Live with Michelle Weinberger? Romy says, well, yeah. And Heather morosely adds, well, I just thought she'd have married Sandy Frink by now. Romy scoffs. Michelle in Frinkazoid? As if. Besides, weren't you into Sandy? Heather glares at her incredulously and says, I was in love with him. There's a difference. The memory seems to have rattled Heather. She grabs her keys and quietly murmurs again, there's a difference. I have to go. She puts her sunglasses back on and Romy waves and offers, I'll tell everyone you said hi. To which Heather turns and says, why don't you tell them all to fuck themselves for making my teenage years so miserable before storming off. The next customer approaches Romy, saying, finally, to which Romy holds up her index finger, indicating, you gotta wait, because she has to call her bestie immediately to tell her what just happened.
Later that day, Romy and Michelle are side by side in their apartment, looking through the old yearbook. Michelle marvels, I can't believe it's already been 10 years, and you saw Heather Moody? She was so weird. They come across a high school photo of Heather in her late 80s goth gear, skulking behind the school cafeteria. The photo comes to life to give us a glimpse in a flash, pack, 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 of Heather's high school experience. Young Heather is trying to sneak a cigarette. Once she's out of view, she puts one in her mouth, then realizes she doesn't have a light. A cowboy in all black is behind the building smoking too, and when she asks him for a light, he flicks his lit butt at her feet and leaves. She scrambles for it and snaps, thanks a lot because I'm not a human being or anything, then takes a grateful drag right as the bell rings. She looks at her cigarette meaningfully and says, there's gotta be a cigarette you can smoke all the way through between classes. Back in present.
Oh, wait a minute.
Huh.
Okay, she thinks this, right? Mm-hmm. So, Shark Tank presentation. Hi, sharks. You ever wanted a nice, satisfying smoke break, but just didn't have enough time?
That's just... In hindsight, that's so horrible. You can kill yourself twice as fast.
Yeah, exactly.
Suck those carcinogens down, girls.
Are you interested in a product where your client base will die off, but they will buy more because they're addicted to it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, do I have a great plan for you?
I don't think you're really being honest and truthful with the Shark Tank presentation, Corinne, because if it was a true representation of somebody that invented the Ladyfair quick-burning paper cigarettes... Uh-huh. She would probably sound a little bit like this. So, sharks, have you ever thought to yourself, I need to smoke in between classes and I just don't have enough time? Well, do I have the thing for you? Lady Fest cigarettes burns twice the time for the lady on the go. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. I was doing it all wrong. What was I thinking?
Mm-hmm.
You're completely right. How could I have gone so wrong?
And Heather's played by Janine Garofalo.
Yes.
And she does not look like she's the inventor of the Ladyfair quick burning cigarettes by any means. She's also wonderful in this movie.
Yeah. Love Janine Garofalo. One of my faves.
Uh-huh. Romy and Michelle turn the yearbook page and their subsequent memory. They come across a photo of the A group, which consisted of all the cheerleaders, a.k.a. the 80s Mean Girls. Christy Mathers, Kelly Possinger, Lisa Lutner, and Michelle Quick.
Mm-hmm.
Romy's expression tells us that they were biatches. And then they muse about who the B group was.
Mm-hmm.
And Romy offers, oh, the B group was the drama crowd like Mark Black and Casey Deegan. They flip to the drama class photo, and Michelle reminds her friend, remember I had the biggest crush on Casey Deegan? I wonder why he didn't like me. The photo comes to life again, and we get a flashback, back, back, that shows Mark Black and Casey Deegan giving each other the come and fuck me eyes across the stage, while young men, there's no need to feel down, I said young men, plays around them. AKA they were gay, in case you didn't get the reference.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because I feel like this movie is such a snapshot in time. It's like this very specific time where mm-hmm. they were starting to kind of more generally include some kind of reference to
mm-hmm.
homosexuality, different things like that. And then, you know, if we go to the very special movie that I started watching, the Romy and Michelle's, in the beginning, they have a lot of their conversations is like, they're staying with a trans woman. And, you know, there's two guys that are like, they might be interested in, oh, but they're gay. And the two guys think that they're cross-dressers by associate. I mean, there's a whole lot more going on in the fantastic movie that is Romy and Michelle in the beginning.
When did that one come out? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, so that one came out in 2005.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because this one was made, like, what, in 97?
Yes.
And that was when they had the gay reference, but it always had to be coupled with a Village People song. Representation was there, but in order to really drive the point home, Village People. Hence the young men.
Yeah.
There's no need to feel down, I'll say young men.
And also, Romy and Michelle didn't realize that they were gay. Like,
yeah.
At all. You know?
Mm-mm.
And it just went completely over their head.
They're also supposed to be in their high school experience was supposed to be like in the 80s. So,
yeah,
I mean, I think it would be easier to kind of a lot of people in the 80s were gay, but kind of masked it behind mm-hmm. the big fluffy hair and the heavy use of makeup on men.
Yeah, and particularly, you know, high school age. But I would say that, you know, due to fantastic people like Boy George and whatnot, during that period of time, things started getting a lot more gender bendy, including mm-hmm. in our favorite hair metal bands.
Yeah.
Like Poison. But yes.
Present day Romy and Michelle continue reminiscing as they walk down the sunny Venice Beach street while Michelle ponders, well, what group were we in? Surely not the C group. Romy assures her friend, no, that was like the honor students and the rejects like Sandy Frink and Heather Mooney. The yearbook shows a science fair photo with Heather and Sandy. We've met Heather, and Sandy Frink is played by Alan Cummings.
A.K.A. Paul Rubens.
A.K.A. There, flashback, back, shows a younger Sandy waving enthusiastically saying, hi, Michelle, hi! While a heartbroken younger Heather looks on disappointedly. The enthusiastic yearbook photographer Toby passes their exhibit and is super excited to interview them later. Heather tells her, fuck off, and Toby agrees, but happily snaps their picture first. This is a comeback around moment, so we need to pay attention for it. And Crin, I was wondering if we should make a noise for our comeback around moments that we need to pay attention to.
Oh.
Much like Kristen's diddaloo, but not that, because then we'd be biting off a let's go to court, RIP. So what other noise could we make that is a pay attention to this because it's coming back around moment sound?
A wooga, a wooga.
Oh, that's good. Okay, let's do that.
President Romy and Michelle are now in a restaurant booth, and the girls finally agree that they weren't in any group. They were loners. No, they weren't. They had each other. I was a loner, much like Heather Mooney, just saying. To emphasize the point, they find a photo of them walking in the background. Michelle excitedly says, oh yeah, there we are, and we are alone with each other. Their flashback, back. Reveals that high school Michelle had to wear a large metal back brace, and Romy was fat, like the diversity in Legally Blonde for Reese Witherspoon to go to Harvard. Romy is fat, yes, super huge quotation marks on that word.
Because she was not fat. She looked like she was wearing maybe like some padding on Mira Sorvino's body.
Maybe.
That's it.
And she mainly had a blazer on with big shoulder pads. And I was like, you take away the shoulder pads and you're fine. Yeah. Those shoulder pads made all the people who wore them added an additional unflattering silhouette to them. Just saying.
Yes, because it made your neck disappear. Who needs to see a neck? More shoulder, more shoulder.
And it just gave like a kind of Frankenstein silhouette, you know, shoulders, straight body. Yeah.
Hot.
I mean, Frankenstein's monster silhouette. Excuse me, all of those of you who are like, it's not Frankenstein. I know. Okay. Anywho, that goes out to Larry, who corrected me about lyrics that I don't care that I say them wrong.
You bite your tongue. He did that out of the kindness of his heart, Corinne. You needed to know.
Sure. You can tell me. That's fine with me. But when it comes back around, I'll probably sing it wrong again. Maybe even to him. A sexy stat. No, just kidding. There are things one does not do with their friend's boyfriend, and that is sing sexy to them. Moving on. They are having lunch on a quad bench, talking shit about teachers and eating cafeteria burgers when young Romy spies Billy Christensen, the quintessential school jock. He's shirtless, but wearing shorts. Definitely shorts. He's got six-pack abs, and he's throwing around a football in slow motion.
I just love how you started twirling your hair when you gave that description of Billy Christensen.
You gotta. You gotta. Twirl your hair when describing that, quote, lusciousness. He comes off kind of as like douchey and smarmy. Like Smarmington to me, personally, of the high school guys that were presented to us as potential love interests during the high school flashback backpacks, I went for the guy in the cowboy hat. So there you go.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Good choice.
Thank you. Romy gets hearts in her eyes and murmurs a quiet, hello, to Billy, but he ignores her and joins the A group because he only has eyes for head cheerleader and head mean girl, Christy Masters. Christy and the other A group girls notice Romy and Michelle watching them and snicker amongst themselves, saying, the weirdos are staring at us again. They're obsessed. And did you see what they're wearing? Where do you even get clothes like that? Lisa Lettner responds, oh, wait.
Awooga, awooga.
It's Lisa Lutner.
I was awooga-ing Lisa Lutner. Thank you for the help with pronunciation. She responds, they made them in home ec class from their own patterns. Actually, I think they're semi-interesting. The pack of girls glare at her, and she backpedals hard, adding, in a freakish way, Christy says, I want to have some fun. Her friend snickers and produces a paper bag, and Christy takes it and wanders over to Romy and Michelle. And Romy and Michelle are so excited. Christy, she's coming up to us. Christy approaches them with a smile and enthusiastically asks, so, are you two trying out for the school play? While she talks, Christy bends a bit and surreptitiously places her hand slightly behind Michelle and out of eyeshot and sticks a large banana magnet on her metal back brace. Michelle tries to prolong their popularity by association moment by asking, what's the musical? Christy smiles really widely and says, The Music Man. Michelle perks up and starts singing, oh, the Wells Fargo Wagon is a coming down the street. Christy attaches a large cherry fridge magnet to Michelle's back as Michelle says, I love that musical. Christy surreptitiously attaches a couple more until Michelle's back brace resembles a refrigerator. Christy then asks rhetorically, oh, can I finish that? And she grabs Romy's burger, the burger that Romy was so looking forward to eating because she loves it when it's burger day at school, and takes a big ass bite out of it. Michelle and Romy look on simultaneously appalled, but also not saying anything because Christy is talking to them. Christy heads back to her own group, and Romy and Michelle are oblivious to the prank and wonder if they're finally gaining acceptance from the popular group when Sandy Frink approaches and quietly informs Michelle about the magnets. Romy and Michelle realize Christy's kindness was a farce to distract them, and when Michelle sees the A group cackling a short ways away, her eyes get watery. Romy stands up and commands her, laugh, laugh. Michelle seems confused until Romy, ha 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 ha, laughs boisterously and encourages her friend, come on, laugh, like I said something funny. Michelle finally understands, and they both, ha 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 ha, laugh like that shit didn't faze them at all, and walk away, further solidifying their fortress of solitude-ish with each other. They're alone together.
Current Romy and Michelle's attitude have been hampered from the memory. Romy tells her friend, "What a bitch. You couldn't help that you had scoliosis. And what was with her taking that burger?" They turn the yearbook page and there are the prom photos, which are strangely included in their yearbook because in my school, the prom was at the very end of the year. But I digress. Michelle reminds her friend, "My God, you were so skinny by then." Romy nods sagely and says, "I know. Getting mono was the best diet." Then we dive into their prom flashback, back, back. Young Romy and Michelle were dancing alone back then, too. Neither of them had dates. Sandy Frink asked Michelle, but she declined. And the two are looking stunning in their Madonna-inspired prom looks. Ooh. Michelle is channeling the desperately seeking Susan era, and Romy is in the Madonna Vogue era. The A group are on the dance floor sidelines, sneering at the duo, and Christy says sarcastically, "Ugh, really nice outfits. It's the Madonna twins."
Ugh.
Romy and Michelle don't hear, though. They are too busy dancing and plotting their way out of Tucson, apparently by being sex workers. Michelle tells her bestie, "Oh, God, it's so typical that we're the only ones here that don't look like we're going to a hoedown." Romy agrees, "Oh, this place is so uncool. I can't wait till we move to LA. Everything's going to happen for us there." Their dance is interrupted by the announcements for the king and queen of the prom. Nobody's surprised that the winners are Christy Masters and Billy Christensen.
What?
But as the couple take their stage and their crowns, Romy gets hearts in her eyes and asks her bestie, "Do you think Billy would dance with me since the last night of school and all?" Michelle encourages, "I bet he would. I mean, who would say no to someone on the last night of school?" Romy smiles encouraged and wanders towards Billy. Michelle shimmies a few more dance moves alone before Sandy appears in front of her and asks for a dance since it's the last night of school and all. And Michelle shuts him down. Apparently, she does not heed her own advice.
Boo! Michelle, come on. You can just dance one dance with the guy who seems...
I know.
Perfectly nice. She doesn't have to date him. By all means, no.
Yeah. Yeah, serious.
Michelle leaves Sandy heartbroken on the dance floor, and Heather, who's a few feet away, offers, "I'll dance with you, Sandy." Heather played by
Janine Garofalo.
Thank you. I know we've already said it, but I'm just saying it again. But he declines, saying, "That's okay. It only counts if you really love the person." And I'm like, ah. Heather dies a little.
No, it doesn't.
No, I know.
It doesn't count. No.
Does he think that Michelle really loves him? Because I don't think he thinks Michelle really loves him.
But he loves her. Mm-hmm. He loves her enough for the both of them.
Oh, okay. That's not creepy at all. At all. Yeah. Heather dies a little inside, and I am confused about her attraction to Sandy just because their vibes just don't match at all.
Yeah, they look like they would be in separate groups across the school from each other, not like scholastic besties.
Yeah.
But
I think Michelle and Sandy make a more sensible, like, I can see it more than Heather and Sandy.
Mm-hmm. But they're both inventors and they're obviously both smarties. So yes. Maybe they just bonded over science. She bonded me with science.
Ooh, bah, bah, bah. She made me fall in love with her with science. Bah, 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 bah. Heather dies a little inside before Toby rushes over with a tray of drinks and exciting party game. She asks, "Hey, who can name all the state capitals?" And she's played by Cameron Manheim. Whoop, whoop.
Awooga, awooga.
Awooga, awooga, yes. Heather snarls, "Fuck off, Toby," which causes Toby's face to fall, and Sandy to accuse, "Heather, how can you be so insensitive?" Heather incredulously asks him, "I'm the insensitive one? Me?" Heather storms out to smoke a cigarette, but again has forgotten her light. The same silent black-clad cowboy is there, outside the venue, and again he flicks his lit butt at her feet. But this time, Heather tells him to go fuck your sister or a sheep or yourself as he wordlessly walks away.
Awooga! Awooga!
I love it. Meanwhile, inside, an enamored Romy finds Billy at the snack table alone. She asks him if he'd like to dance, and he agrees, but asks her, just give me a second. He rushes over to Christy and the other A-group girls and divulges, "That Romy girl just asked me to dance with her. What should I do?" Christy smirks mischievously and tells him, "Leave this to me." Meanwhile, an elated Romy finds Michelle and tells her the good news. The pair jumps up and down and screams with excitement. Romy regains her composure and says, "I can't believe it. How do I look?" Michelle gives her a once-over and says, "My goodness, you look so good with blonde hair and dark roots. It's not even funny." Just then, Christy appears in a huff.
In a huff.
And says accusingly, "Thanks for stealing my boyfriend, Romy. Billy said he always had a crush on you, and now that he knows you like him too, he doesn't want to pretend with me anymore. You ruined everything." Christy storms off, and Romy and Michelle are dumbfounded at the way the tables have turned. Romy waits expectantly by the dance floor and doesn't see that in the distance, Billy and Christy are driving away on his motorcycle. Awooga! Awooga! Hours pass before Romy tearfully realizes she was stood up. She chastises herself for being so stupid, and Michelle says softly, "I'll dance with you, Romy." Romy agrees, and the friends make their way to an empty dance floor. Romy sobs on Michelle's shoulder, and they sway back and forth as Cyndi Lauper sings, "If you're lost, you can look and you will find me. Time after time, if you fall, I will catch you. I will be waiting. Time after time." Which, kind of like their friendship, right? Huh?
Oh, that song is so sad. You could put that music over anything and it would instantly make it sad.
I love that song so much. So much.
You know, one thing I've always noticed in movie prom scenes,
huh,
is they always have like food and punch. None of my proms that I went to, I've only went to a couple, but they never had food and beverages provided because that was just asking for trouble.
Oh, I know. Like an open bowl of punch? Who would have that at prom? Not at any of the schools I went to. Fuck no.
No. Food and snacks on a table? You're just asking for a food fight. At least at the circles of groups and schools that I went to. That was just a no, no, no. You go to dinner before with your friends and then you come to the prom afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Current day Romy and Michelle close the yearbook. Romy's a little shaken by the prom memory, but Michelle seems unaffected and says, "Just wait till we go back. You're way cuter now than you were in high school. Besides, look at our lifestyles. We're living in LA and they're all still stuck in Tucson." This lifts Romy's spirit and she agrees, "Yeah, we're going to go back there and we'll blow everyone away." Cut to Romy and Michelle later that night at the glamorous laundromat answering their reunion questionnaires. "Oh, I can't stand this. Something I hate about LA is no fucking apartments unless you pay $3,000 and up come with washer and dryer hookups. So you are forced to go to laundromats, which is my most unfavorite fucking thing to do." Also, if you're moving to LA, they don't have refrigerators in apartments either. So just FYI.
Refrigerators are frequently standard here in the Bay Area, but washer and dryer hookups in one's apartment, yeah, that's just for rich people. That's not for regular renters like me. Although my building does have a washer and dryer room.
Yes. And mine does not, which hence me going to the laundromat, which I super hate. I really hate it. Hate, hate, hate.
Well, I mean, right now our laundry room is totally defunct. Because we have slumlords right now for who own the building.
Mm. We had a nice laundry room at my old apartment, even though the apartment was shit. The laundry room was fairly decent, and me and David would take turns to do neighbor watch because we tended to do our laundry on the weekends, like Saturday morning, or at least I did. And there was always one lady that lived downstairs and three doors from the laundry rat that would bring 15 loads of laundry and do them all at the same time.
No, no, no. Yeah.
So we're like, oh, there, nope, she beat you. Yep, they're going to be occupied for 3.5 hours now.
That would totally piss me off.
Oh, yeah.
That's like shitty behavior. That's super inconsiderate.
The ladies are answering the questionnaire for the reunion committee so they know what they've been up to for the past 10 years. At first, they're enthusiastic, but it only takes 5 questions to bring Romy down, and she realizes their lives don't seem that impressive after all. Michelle's confused, and Romy clarifies, "Does it really seem impressive that we've both lived together for 10 years, neither of us are married or engaged, and I'm a cashier and you're unemployed?" Michelle looks blankly for a second before answering, "Well, that's super impressive." Later that night in their apartment, the pair are still pondering their situation when Michelle pipes up. Romy, I still want to go to the reunion, so can't we just think of something? Romy, who we've gathered is the brains between the two, gets her little brain hamster on the wheel, and the hamster's full speed ahead when her face lights up and she tells Michelle, the reunion's still 2 weeks away. That's plenty of time for me to find us some boyfriends and for you to get a killer new job. Michelle looks confused and asks, if those things are so easy to get, wouldn't we have them by now?
Mm-hmm.
Romy assures her friend that now they have the reunion as motivation, and Michelle's back on board and grabs a bag of Cool Ranch Doritos and starts snacking. Romy gingerly removes the chip from her friend's hand and says, in addition to getting more impressive lives, I also think we should lose some weight. Michelle gives Romy the stink eye and mutters, well, like that one chip would have made a difference. It wasn't even a whole chip. And mind you, these two girls are stick rail thin, so.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I mean, Romy's diet that they previously referred to, that I don't think is mentioned, which is fine.
Mm-mm.
But Michelle looks at Romy and was like, before they go out to the club, and she's like, oh, have you lost weight? And Romy's like, yeah, I went on a no-fat diet of gummy bears. And so I think Romy's diet of gummy bears was so successful. I think a Nerds Clusters diet would be just the thing. Zero fat, zero consequences, plus
all the diabetes.
All the diabetes. Here's another dieting pro tip from ODK. You gain calories if you eat food off of your own plate. But if you eat food off of somebody else's plate, those calories don't count. It's like zero calories.
Oh my God, no wonder why my cousin's so skinny. She never orders anything. She always just eats off of her husband's plate. And pro tip, I went to dinner with him not too long ago. And she was like, I never order anything because, I'm not going to say his name, always orders so much. So I just eat off of his plate. And then I'm like, he got a salad, an appetizer, and an entree. And I'm like, I bet he does that because he knows you eat his food and he wants to have enough.
Yes.
He learned the trick. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to get these three things for me. Oh, you want some? Oh, good thing I got three things. So you can have some.
Then we get a montage of the ladies trying to construct an impressive life. And I'd like to take a moment. I have seen like different kinds of posts from people and I totally get it. They're like, I'm 25, I'm 30, I'm 37, I'm whatever age. And they're like, I'm freaking out because what have I done with my life? And I'm like, I'm 47 and I'm working as a receptionist. And I think life is just weird. Like, life is a journey. If I was going to have plotted out my life the way that I thought in middle school, I would be a park ranger. I would be married. I would have some kind of a house somewhere, maybe in a semi-foresty area. I don't know. And, in, mm-hmm. you know, I live in a small one-bedroom apartment in Oakland. I am single AF, and I work as a receptionist. Life, it's a journey. It's not an end destination. So you're whoever you are, you're good where you're at, and you can make things better, but things rarely go according to the ABC plan that they tell you in high school you need to get from here to there.
You forgot one huge factor, Corinne. You are also one half of the podcast WonderKiss.
Well, yes.
Just putting that out there.
That was part of me manifesting my own destiny where we could have a podcasting audience of dozens who listen to us. Every week.
I feel that. I remember I was like, I'm going to have a big house with a swimming pool somewhere and have kids and be married and da da da. And now I'm sitting here in my late 40s going, all I want is a washer and dryer of my own and a place to park my car that I don't have to fight for.
Right. If I lived where you were, I would want a place to park my car that I don't have to fight for either.
Mm-hmm.
There's easier parking in my neighborhood than in your neighborhood.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. 1,000%.
Okay. I'm reading. They're at the gym on exercise bikes, sweating off the LBs. Then we cut to Michelle walking into a Versace boutique on Rodeo Drive to apply for a job. She makes a great impression by telling the manager, I'm familiar with the entire Versace line, and I know if you gave me a chance, I could just sell the shit out of this stuff. And to me, fashion is everything. Michelle sees an older lady in the store trying on a yellow skirt suit and calls out, "Hey, hi! That outfit looks really good on you." The woman smiles and Michelle turns back to the manager and says, "See? And I have a really believable way of telling people they look good, even though I'm..." She makes jacking off movements with her mouth and her hand. Good times. More kind of like oral, whatever. I don't know. Little column A, little column B. The woman glares back at Michelle as Michelle mutters, "I think she heard me." The manager turns Michelle away.
Shocking.
I know. What? And she in turn goes to Barney's, not the purple dinosaur, but the high-end department store, for another interview where she makes an even worse first impression by telling the hiring manager, "You know, my first choice was to work at a boutique on Rodeo Drive, but this will do." The manager smiles at her stiffly and says, "Thanks, but no thanks. We have no openings, but I could see if there's any positions available at our discount outlet." Michelle is disappointed, but gets the address. Meanwhile, Romy's not having luck on the boyfriend front either. One night, at their usual hotspot/nightclub, she's approached by a man in a smart-looking suit. Romy beams at him and asks, "Nice suit. Is that our money?" The man confirms this, so she asks, "What do you do for a living?" When the man says, "I'm a suit salesman," Romy's face falls and she tells the guy, "Will you excuse me? I cut my foot earlier and my shoe's filling up with blood." Then she walks away while dragging one leg dramatically across the floor.
That's right. She said she cut her foot and her shoe is filling up with blood as an excuse to get away from somebody at a club.
I mean, it's not over dramatic at all or anything.
No. And she really sold it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just thinking, they're like 28 or so at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And I'm reflecting about the very narrow window of time that I went clubbing for.
Ugh.
And it was like literally between basically 1999 and maybe 2001. Done.
That's it. Got it out of my system.
Yep, yep.
Club days over.
Over. My club days weren't fast and furious, and the ones that I had, it ended quite quickly, yes. The next day, the friends are in a kickboxing class, and Romy is chastising Michelle for not wanting to pursue the offered job. Michelle says incredulously, "Me? In a discount outlet?" Romy points out, "Any job is better than no job." So Michelle reluctantly agrees and kicks the shit out of her heavy bag, probably imagining it's her new discount outlet job.
But can a discount outlet job be that bad?
Yes. Yes, it can.
Yes, yes, it can. Michelle is at this discount outlet, and the Barney's guy was very, very kind in his description because this place looks like a cross between Big Lots and a thrift store.
Yeah.
Michelle's being shown around by the outlet manager, who's bragging that he only spent $1 for the tie he's wearing, while leading her through tables of shoes. Not shelves with boxes, just shoes tied together, clumped onto tables.
Yeah, in large piles.
Yes, in large piles.
With like a $4 sign.
Right.
Yeah.
How do you find your size? Good luck. It's a free-for-all smorgasbord. Dive in. A homeless-looking woman pushes between the pair to inspect some footwear, and a baby wails in the distance as the manager asks Michelle, "So, what do you think?" Michelle looks like she's going to cry. She says quietly, I think I want to go, and beelines it out of there. Later that day, Romy and Michelle are on the gym treadmills wearing the shiniest workout gear and large, large, chunky platform heeled sneakers.
Yes.
Romy's starting to get discouraged because the reunion's a week away and they have not accomplished anything. She jumps off the treadmill to weigh herself and is dismayed to find that she's gained a pound. Michelle follows after her and says, "That's impossible. Did you deduct 16 pounds for the shoes?"
Yes.
But Romy's over it and says, "Forget it. I'm not going. We can't find boyfriends and get jobs in 2 weeks." Michelle looks at her confused and says, "But I thought you said we could." The defeated friends go back to their little apartment and have a calorie fest. Every sweet and snack in the house is littered around them. Romy's sucking on a tube of cookie dough, and Michelle's eating ice cream and thumbing through the most recent episode of Vogue. Michelle marvels, "Oh, the executive women today are so pretty." Romy miserably says, "They're not real executives. They're models. They just look like executives because they're wearing those stupid fake glasses and business suits." She gets a glimmer in her eyes and says, "Oh my God, Michelle, that's it. We can pretend to be successful at the reunion. How are they going to know? They're in Tucson and we're here.
Yeah.
We can go and just look like businesswomen." Michelle is excited about this idea until she has a thought and asks, "Won't they know that we're not really businesswomen if we drive up in a Nova?" Romy gives her friend a knowing look and says, "If you can take care of the clothes, I'll take care of the car."
And I would just like to say that it is true that they are sharing a one-bedroom apartment with each other. Mind you, beachfront apartment, but one-bedroom apartment with each other. But they left their town and they went to pursue their dreams somewhere, and they're living in a different area and they're doing different things than the people who stayed back home. So, like, in many ways, I actually think of them as successes for just putting themselves out there.
I'm so glad you said that, Corinne, because earlier when you were talking about your life not going in the direction you want, I thought the same thing many a time. I was like, oh, but then I disliked living in Fresno so much that I'm like, what would it be like living over here? What would it be like living over here? What would it be like living over here? Because I was always like trying to find my home, and I moved around a lot trying to find it. And although I don't have a lot to show for it because I didn't put down any roots, I do have all the experiences that I had in all the different places that I lived. So I also got up and moved to LA, Corinne. So admire me. Admire me.
Oh, I admire you. I admire the fact that actually I think of the variety of places you lived, Pacifica was your favorite. So
I love Pacifica. And you hated it.
I hated it.
Uh-huh.
Not enough sunshine. Sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy. I need sunshine. I'm sunshine powered. Gosh darn it. You are not.
Nope. Especially not after living in the Central Valley for almost 2 decades. I had enough sun for 5 lifetimes.
We next see Romy in a skin-tight peach dress marching towards Ramon's office at work. A group of mechanics are there in the office watching a television and laughing. Ha, 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 ha. Ha, 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 ha. Ho, 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 ho. She stands behind them and says, "Clear out, boys. I need to talk to Ramon." The men are momentarily stunned by her tiny, tight dress, but Ramon claps his hands, which causes the groups to scatter. Romy sits across from him and says flirtatiously, "I heard you got a great deal on a Jaguar and are fixing it up. Well, me and Michelle have this reunion we're going to, and we need a cool car. Can I borrow yours?" Ramon smirks and says, "Well, what do I get out of it?" Romy asks, "What do you want?" And Ramon looks her up and down meaningfully and responds huskily, "Oh, Romy, you know what I want." She sits up and cries, "I'm not going to sleep with you for a stupid car." Ramon argues, "Well, I got to get something." Romy smirks and tells him, "Close the blinds. I'm sure we can come to an arrangement." "What do you think that arrangement will be?" Winky, winky.
Well, I got a different picture now that you told me their origin story. Jesus.
Find out what the arrangement is and if this movie gets an NC-17 rating after this break. And we're back. A short while later, we see the mechanics huddled around the office window because some interesting moans and sounds are coming from inside. We hear Romy say, "I am America and you are Columbus. Discover me, Ramon." "Is that an earthquake?" "No, it's Ramon." When the camera pans inside the office, we see it's all an act. Shocking! And fully clothed Ramon is feeding a fully clothed Romy the lines. They're just pretending to have sex, but the guys outside don't know that. Ramon wants her to say something about his penis size. So she cries, "Oh, Ramon, your penis is so big. I'm already coming. Okay, get off me now." Ramon's disappointed by the abrupt ending of their, quote, lovemaking. But Romy reminds him, you wanted it to be believable. The performance was enough to get her the car, because we next see Romy pulling up to her apartment to pick up Michelle in a burgundy convertible Jaguar. Michelle is impressed and asks her friend, what did you do to get this car? Romy jokingly says, gave all the guys in the service department hand jobs. Michelle nonplussed says, well, while you were doing that, I was making us a mixtape of all our nostalgic high school songs. And frequently when we watch movies, Tamara talks about how amazing the soundtrack is. And I have to say, this movie, I was like wanting to sing along loud and proud to almost all the songs in it. I loved the soundtrack in this movie. Romy stops short and says, I was kidding. You don't really think I'd do that for a car, do you? Michelle's silence says it all. And Romy decides to drop it. And they get in the car and head to Tucson, Arizona. Here we come.
I love, like, the look Michelle gave her when she asked her that was like, I called it the parakeet look. Because she just looks at her and kind of like tilts her head from side to side. Like, what do you mean? The girls only experience a few snafus on the trip, like the car backfiring repeatedly every time it started and a pesky kid that tormented Michelle on the drive. But they make it to Arizona in one piece. The friends stop at a truck stop to change into their successful businesswomen outfits and emerge from the restroom in black blazers, matching black skirts, and their hair in tight updos. Romy reminds her friend, okay, from here on out, we are successful, educated businesswomen. Michelle agrees. As they make their way to the diner counter, Michelle remarks, unbusinesswomanly-like, ugh, this underwear keeps going up my butt. They find a waitress, and Romy asks her, say, do you have a businesswoman lunch special? The waitress is confused, so Romy adds, you know, like a lunch special, but for businesswomen? Michelle chimes in, we're from L.A. on our way to Tucson for a business thing. The waitress finally asks, what kind of business are you two in? And we cut to Romy and Michelle back in the car. Romy is chastising herself for not thinking of their business backstory, while Michelle plays with the paper fortune teller. Hopefully you know what those are. They're the little things that you'd make squares, and you say, how many boyfriends do I get? And then you'd open up the little square of paper, and it would tell you.
Or I've heard them called cootie catchers.
What are they?
Cootie catchers.
They were called something else too, because I had to look it up. I'm like, what the hell do you call those? And they said paper fortune teller, and then they called it something else, but it wasn't a cootie catcher. Dang it. So Romy rips it off her hand because they have to come up with something before they get to Tucson. Michelle has no ideas, but Romy's little hamster comes back to life on its little wheel, and she cries, I know. We'll say we have like our own company, like we invented something. Michelle's on board and asks, like what? Romy thinks about it and says, something that everybody knows, but no one knows who made it, like Post-its. Michelle asks, the little papers with the stickums on the back? Romy nods. We'll say we were working at an advertising agency after college. We were giving a presentation and we were out of paper clips. So then I said, wouldn't it be great if there was a stickum on the back of the paper so it would just stay? Michelle's nodding along, loving all of Romy's ideas, until Romy says, and you got like this grandfather or uncle that has a paper company and he's really into it and the rest is history. Michelle frowns and says, well, it sounds like you invented Post-its by yourself. Romy argues, well, your relative had the paper company. Okay, what if we say that you designed them, I invented them, but it was your idea to make them yellow. Michelle is getting more and more upset, and Romy offers, well, it's just, we've known most of these people since elementary school, and I think I'm more believable as an inventor, and you're more believable as a designer. Michelle practically spits a curt, and turns up the music.
And the song that's playing during their argument is, Come, Chameleon. And I was like, Romy has her karma coming for her for like the way she is with Michelle. Romy realizes she's upset her friend and decides to pull over on a desolate stretch of road. Romy says, God, I try to be honest for once and it blows up in my face. This causes Michelle to get out of the car, slam the door and yell, you want to be honest? Let's be honest. I let you have the ideas so you don't feel bad that I'm cuter. Romy scoffs, you're not cuter. And Michelle retorts, I am so cuter. It's common knowledge. I'm the Mary and you're the Rhoda. This gets Romy heated and she argues, how can you be the Mary? You're Jewish. Michelle says, irritated. I mean, cuteness wise. Romy's pissed and asks, what proof do you even have that you're cuter? Michelle ponders this for a second and says, well, I lost my virginity first. Romy snaps, to your cousin Barry, I wouldn't brag about it. Cousin lovin'. Michelle retorts, okay, then who else gets asked to dance first? It's no wonder you couldn't find us boyfriends. Now the gloves are off and Romy goes low and cries, well, you can't even get a job. I carry you, Michelle. Without me, you'd be lost. Michelle denies this, but Romy is done and adds, we'll just see when we get to Tucson. And at the reunion, we go our separate ways. They're both brooding as they get back into the car, and Michelle grunts, we'll drive fast then. We cut to the ladies later that evening. They arrive at an upscale hotel where the reunion is being held. They walk in separately. Michelle sees that Romy found Billy Christensen immediately. He looks the same, and he thinks Romy looks fan-fucking-tastic. When Billy asks what she's been up to, Romy says, I invented Post-its. Michelle scoffs when she hears this and walks away. Michelle then sees the A-group girls across the room, and they look the same, wearing their coordinating pastel outfits. She can hear Christy Masters talking about news and comes over to ask, did you become a news anchor like you said you would? Christy says grandly, no, I'm a weather girl. The group asks what Michelle has been up to, and when Michelle tells the group that she invented Post-its, Christy narrows her eyes and says, well then, you wouldn't mind walking us through how you came up with that idea. Michelle pauses a beat and then says, actually, I made like this special kind of glue. You see, ordinarily, when you make glue, you need to thermoset your resin. And after it cools, you mix it in an epoxy, which is just a fancy schmancy name for any simple oxygenated adhesive. And I thought maybe you could raise the viscosity by adding a complex glucose derivative during the emulsifying process. And it turns out I was right. The A group is floored. And one of Christy's minions says, wow, you must be the most successful person here. Michelle shrugs and says, yeah, and you're not. Bye. And turns and walks away.
Get it, Michelle. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, outside, Romy and Billy are sitting in her Jaguar. They're about to kiss.
Hold on. Huh? They're not just sitting in the Jaguar. Billy is in the driver's seat going, and pretending to drive. Isn't that hot?
Sorry. That's a crucial plot point, yes.
Yes.
Billy is pretending to drive the convertible Jaguar.
And making car noises while he
And making does. Car noises.
Yes.
Emphasis on the car noises. They're about to kiss when Michelle finds them and exclaims, oh my God, Romy, you won't believe what just happened. Romy brushes her off because she's busy. So Michelle leaves in a huff.
In a huff.
She doesn't get too far before she's hit by a limousine. Yep, you heard that right. She walks, she gets hit by a limousine, she flies into the air and bounces across the entirety of the limousine roof until she comes to the back of the limousine and tumbles onto the ground.
Yeah, and it's a stretch limo, so she's bouncing
it's
for a while.
It's a stretch limo. Yes. She is like the little bouncing ball that tells you what the lyrics of the song are as it's playing. A chiseled face, handsome?
Really?
Quote. I mean, it's supposed to be handsome. He's supposed to be a chiseled face, handsome Adonis. That is the limo passenger, rushes out and apologizes. He asks if she would like to get inside his limo, where he has boxes of Kleenex.
Ooh.
Michelle agrees, and once they're in the super spacious back seat, he hands her a box of tissue, saying, here you go, Michelle. How does he know her name? Why, it's Sandy Frank. He explains that after he made his first million, his gift to himself was a new face.
Ew.
Michelle has hearts in her eyes and says, Well, you picked a good one. Meanwhile,
his face creeps me the fuck out. His new face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because it's Alan Cummings with all kinds of freaking
prosthetics on.
Prosthetics on. Yeah. That he's got like a prosthetic chin and prosthetic cheeks. So he's, and the prosthetics weren't that good. So he's over there talking to Michelle without any of his face moving. It's much like a lot of people here after they get a bountiful batch of Botox.
Uh-huh. Or collagen. Yes.
Meanwhile, Romy's across the parking lot telling Billy how she used to doodle Mrs. Billy Christensen in her notebook about 1,000 times.
Don't do that. Don't admit that.
But they're interrupted when Christy Masters comes out to Romy's car saying, Billy, I've been looking all over for you. Do you want to dance for old time's sake? He looks torn until he sees Romy's face and says, no, thanks. I owe this one to Romy. Huh. Romy beams as he leads her back inside. Meanwhile, in the limo, Michelle has moved quick with Sandy. Her top's off and they're making out furiously.
Ooh.
Inexplicably, Toby floats into view through the sunroof and says, hurry up, you guys. The votes are about to start. Sandy looks at Michelle seriously and says, we better get in there. And floats through the sunroof after Toby.
Uh-huh.
And Michelle follows on foot. We don't know, because we just see her inside where everybody convenes, where they're awarding the most changed for the better since high school award. Billy Christensen's on stage announcing, and he opens up the envelope and declares, it's a tie! The two winners of the most improved since high school award is Romy White and Michelle Weinberger! The two ex-friends come onto opposite ends of the stage. Romy gets happily spun around in Billy's arms, and Michelle stands there dumbfounded in her bra. Her acceptance speech is merely, sorry, I couldn't find my shirt, which causes the room to erupt into thunderous applause. The two friends exchange longing looks as they get into their respective cars with their bows, which are now inexplicably parked inside the venue instead of out in the in the parking lot, and they both drive away. In opposite directions. We cut to Michelle 50 years later. She's rich, white-haired, and in a mansion married to Sandy. She misses her friend, and her husband encourages her to call Romy. She does, on a super high-tech video phone. It was like today's Zoom calls, but we didn't have anything like that back in 1997, yeah. So it was super like, oh my god, she's talking to somebody through a video.
It's the future. Yes.
The future. Little did we know, we're not going to like that after a while. Like, no, don't Zoom call. Shit. Hi. Romy's son, Billy Christensen Jr., informs Michelle that his mother is on her deathbed. And when Michelle insists on talking to her, and mind you, they're all super old. I don't know if I emphasize that enough. They're super old.
Yeah, but I've got to say, Billy Christensen Jr., looks super old. Like, he looks shitty. He's been smoking too many of those Janine Garofalo fast-burning cigarettes, I think.
Mm, indeed. And Michelle insists on talking to Romy, and when she hears Romy's weak voice in the next room saying, not until you admit that I'm the Mary and you're the Rhoda. This throws Michelle into a rage, and she yells back into the video phone, I'm the Mary! I'm the Mary, and you're just a pasty hag on a deathbed. Romy gives her friend the finger while her life support machines go crazy and they hang up.
Ooh, not good. Not good. Oh, by the way, I'm the Mary and you're the Rhoda.
That would be helpful if I knew who either of them were. I mean, I know in theory who they are, but I've never seen that show. Not once.
I actually think that Rhoda is probably the more interesting of the two of them. But yeah. And Mary Tyler Moore has the randomest living room. It's sunken. It's anyway. Okay. Winds up that the whole sequence was a dream. Surprise! The floating people through the sunroof might have been a clue. I don't know.
That's what gave it away to me. I'm like, oh, we're flying. Okay, so this isn't real.
Yeah. Yeah. This is Michelle's dream, and we see her waking up alone in the JAG in front of the hotel at the reunion. She mumbles, thanks for waking me, Romy. But Romy doesn't hear her. She's already inside on the hunt for Billy Christensen. Michelle enters the venue and is stopped at the door by Toby, who greets her excitedly, gives her a name tag, and tells her, Romy's already inside. Michelle scoffs, saying,
We don't talk anymore. We had a falling out over post-it notes a few hours ago. Then goes inside. Meanwhile, Romy finally spots Billy at the bar. But before she can make her way over, she bumps into a short-haired, smartly dressed Lisa Lutner. They greet each other and Romy asks, and see, this is also, I would say, part a sign of the times, because we all know that she's a lesbian, but they don't really talk about her being a lesbian, nor do they have any real, like, lesbian action happen.
I thought they were just trying to portray her as a ball-busting businesswoman.
Oh, you didn't think that she was a lesbian?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
I don't know why, I just don't think that lesbians are super into fashion.
I would put good-ass money on her being a lesbian.
Okay. Write in, gentle listeners, if you have an opinion. Was Lisa Lutner lesbian, or was she just a ball-busting businesswoman and a Vogue associate executive director, which I forgot. I'm spoiler alert. Sorry, Corinne. Please continue.
Totally fine, even though you ruined it all. I'm sorry. I'm leaving. Come, chameleon. Romy asks Lisa, where's the rest of the A group? Lisa admits that she lost touch with them over the years and asks Romy what she's been up to. Romy confidently answers, I invented post-its. Lisa stares at her, expressionless, but really, her eyes are saying, sure, Jan, sure you did. Lisa stares at her expressionless and Romy adds, you know, the sticky things. Lisa does, but looks unimpressed. Romy asks what she's been up to, and when Lisa responds...
What?
When Lisa responds...
Awooga! Awooga!
Oh, also...
What?
Romy asks what she's been up to, and what you already spoilered, alert.
Oh, did. I'm an associate editor at Vogue magazine? Is that what she says, Corinne?
Yes! That's what she says.
I don't imagine why you wanted me to say that instead of you.
Because you already said it.
The first or the second time.
I'll take them both. Romy fangirls out and gushes. I've got every issue of Vogue from the last 10 years. Lisa excuses herself and then Romy sees the rest of the A group across the room and is emboldened to say hello. There's a trio, a threesome, if you will, and they are very pregnant and swapping mommy stories when she approaches. Christy greets her coolly until she realizes who Romy is and says, oh, you were the chubby girl. And once again we say, chubby? Really? Romy takes us in stride and asks Christy, so did you become the anchor woman you always wanted to be? Christy smiles with a superior air and says, oh no, I don't even watch TV anymore. My priorities have changed since I became a mommy. And I went out on a date with a guy who asked me when he found out I didn't have kids if I was selfish. Because you're not selfish, apparently, if you have children, but you are selfish if you don't have children.
Damn right. I am super fucking selfish and I am proud of it. I don't have enough attention to give myself and another whole other person in this world. Therefore, I'm not going to have it because I don't want them to have a lesser childhood than I think they deserve. And unless I know I can give them 1,000% of the same attention I give myself, I'm not doing it.
And I don't think of myself as selfish, but also I am 100% okay with not having had kids. It doesn't mean that I can't contribute in other ways. And also, unpopular opinion, but I think that people who have multiple children are kind of selfish because I feel like if the population was lower in the world, that things would be better for the ecosystem, etc. That having been said, I'm not being judgmental. Like, have as many children as you want, like, do your thing, whatever. But yeah.
But if you want to talk about the environment and you have 6 kids, I'm going to be like, you know what's really good for the environment? Less people.
Well, and I'm like, foster, adopt.
The most basic form of recycling, adopt a child.
Yes, exactly. Anywho, so Christy's a mommy who doesn't watch TV anymore. And can you believe this is number 3? And she rubs her belly softly. Romy smirks and says, oh my God, I love this line so much. 3 kids? God, you must feel tied down. Christy's face hardens, and she says tightly, no, I'm very fulfilled.
Besides, Billy wants a big family. And I have relatives and whatnot. They do have big families, lots of kids, and they are very fulfilled by them. However, I don't think Christy actually is.
No.
When Romy hears the name Billy, this causes her face to fall and she asks softly, "You married Billy Christensen?" Christy holds up her ring finger smugly and says, "For about 10 years now." One of the other A group girls asks Romy if she has any kids, and Romy shakes her head, saying, "No, I don't have time running my own company and all. I invented Post-its." The group of ladies chuckles to themselves, obviously not believing her, when one tells Christy, "Oh, you know Sandy Frank? He supposedly made a fortune inventing this special rubber that's used in every tennis shoe in North America." Romy, in an effort to regain her clout, holds up her flip phone, saying, and mind you, flip phone, this is from a certain era, so it looks more like
a black brick with an antenna sticking out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Black brick with antenna sticking out. So she holds up her flip phone, saying to the group, "If anyone needs to make a call, I have a phone." This causes the A group to sip their drinks and avoid eye contact, leaving Romy awkwardly standing alone.
But she's not alone for long, because barreling towards her is Heather Mooney.
Ooh.
Michelle sees her come in and ditches her conversation with Lisa Lutner and gets out her pocket popcorn, saying, "This is going to be so good." Heather saddles up next to Romy, who's shocked and panicked to see her. Romy mutters, "I thought you weren't coming." Heather looks around unimpressed and says, "Well, I figured since Sandy hadn't married Michelle yet, I'd show up." What a waste of a tank of gas. She sees the A group and says, "Just go ahead and ignore me like you did in high school."
Ooh.
Romy is trying desperately to get Heather away from the group and her lies. But not before Christy asks Heather, "So, what have you been up to?" When Heather divulges that she's the inventor of Lady Fair cigarettes, quick burning paper, another A grouper says, "Wow, we have a whole class of inventors. You, Sandy Frink, and Romy invented Post-its." Heather's distractedly looking around and tells Romy, "No, you didn't." Romy argues that she did, and they go back and forth until Romy cries, "Well, who did invent Post-its then?" Heather informs her, "A guy named Art Fry from 3M Corp. We studied him in business school." This sends Christy and the A group girls into peals of laughter. But Michelle, who's been watching from afar, puts down her pocket popcorn and comes to the rescue, while Heather ungracefully ducks out. She's like, "Oh, shit."
Yeah.
And just kind of backs away, backs away, backs away, backs away. But Michelle comes up and tells them, "What are you all laughing for? You're the ones that got fat."
Ooh.
And when they inform her that they're pregnant, she retorts, "Well, I hope your babies look like monkeys," and ushers Romy away to a quiet corner. By this time, Romy's in tears, and Michelle tells her, "There's worse things than telling a stupid lie and having people laugh at you." Romy asks, "Like what?" And Michelle tells her, "Like losing your best friend." She regales her bestie with some details from her banana sa dream and apologizes, saying, "I hate that we're not friends, and you're as cute as me, and in some countries, cuter." And Romy tearfully apologizes for saying Michelle couldn't invent Post-its. Michelle shrugs, accepting that maybe she can't, and adds, "But I did know the formula for glue in my dream."
I love that.
That's why I included the whole formula, because I was like, that's gold.
Yeah.
That's gold right there.
If you hadn't, I would have put it in.
That's as gold as a yellow Post-it note.
Yeah.
The friends decide that telling four people a lie isn't that bad and wander back into the main room where Christy Masters Christensen has taken the stage to give the welcome speech. She does the most annoying thing that I can't stand, is that she gets on there and she hears everybody murmuring. She's like, "Everybody, calm down, calm down." Because, like, I'm a mommy and you're all children that need to be shushed. Blech. Anyways. She's there to give the welcome speech and points out some of the school's success stories, like Lisa Lutner at Vogue and another classmate that plays football for the Dallas Cowboys. And she says snarkily, "And Romy White, who claimed she invented Post-its." She giggles maliciously and lets the comment hang in the air, and the other reunioners begin chuckling along with her.
Fucker. And
So, Tam, just like you, I've been friends occasionally with, because you mentioned this in an earlier episode, with some lying liar pants. You know, mm-hmm. people who tell, like, kind of preposterous stories and who will say things like, well, I invented the sticker for Post-it notes.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was friends with them, I just took what they said sort of with a grain of salt and was kind of like in my head, sure, Jan.
Yeah.
But this bitch, she is just horrible. So she's making herself feel better because she's all unfulfilled and pregnant by publicly shaming people. Like, what the hell? What does she gain out of that? I mean, it's just, it's such a shitty thing to do. You know, I was with said friends when other friends would be like, well, I know you're not telling the truth because, see, these proof pictures that you have look like they're taken from TV and, you know, like this other stuff. And I'm just like, you know, I just have my pocket popcorn out and just be like, looking at the conversation being like, I'm not getting in the middle with this of this because you cannot argue with people who are telling tall tales and you cannot reason with that. You just let it go and enjoy mm-hmm. the general companionship
mm-hmm.
or avoid them, one or the other. It's fine either way, but you don't need to be an asshole.
Christy is the quintessential I'm gonna step on your head to make myself taller personality.
Boo.
Like, I have to cut you down to make myself bigger.
Boo.
Yeah. I already see myself down here pretty low to the ground, so I'm going to have to cut you pretty deep so that you're lower than me and I could feel superior and loom over you.
Look, just because there was one time when I kept on telling you, no, I can't really see your blush. You need to apply more. You need to apply more. Oh, your eyeshadow is just like, we're going to be in a darker environment, so you should go harder, bigger, stronger with that. Doesn't mean that, you know, I was trying to make you look bad in comparison to me so that when we went out, I would just look amazing and glorious and fresh-faced or anything.
That's right, because you are the makeup guru that I go to for tips.
Never, because the amount of makeup that Corinne wears is 99% of the time 0%.
Yes. The makeup I wear in a day is probably the amount of makeup you wear in 2.5 years.
We'll say in a year. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's generous. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Romy retreats to the restroom with Michelle in tow and balls. All I wanted was people to think we're better than we were in high school. Michelle has had enough and says, you know, Romy, in high school, I never thought we were so bad. We always had so much fun. And up until a couple weeks ago, I thought our lives weren't that bad either. So I think we should go out there and be ourselves. Romy sniffles. I don't think I can. And Michelle asks sharply, well, can you stop being a big baby? This new bossy side of Michelle works, and Romy turns off her tears. I like this new side of you. And the duo go back to the Jag and put on their real clothes. They emerge back into the reunion, Michelle wearing a pink mini dress with hologram pattern and faux fur trim, and Romy in a shimmery blue mini dress. Somebody in wardrobe for this movie must have been a Trekkie because there is literally a large silver Star Trek insignia smack dab in the center of her boobs and mm-hmm. matching silver trim. They walk straight to the A group.
That's so funny because I put the Star Trek logo, but then I was looking off and I was like, oh no, that's probably not what they were intending. But I'm so glad you said that.
Okay, because I was like, I know she just said like a silver thing. And I was like, but it really looks like the Star Trek logo. I've got to mention that.
It does. It totally does.
Oh, I'm so glad that you agree.
You can. I was like, duck, 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 delete, 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 delete. No, okay, I'll just say it's like a silver superhero-like emblem. No, bitch, that's a Star Trek logo.
Yes. As Corinne the Trekkie affirms, it's a Star Trek logo. They walk straight to the A group, and Christy is not done being a mean girl. She snickers. Look at those outfits. Post-it notes must be really lucrative. Her minions giggle, but this time Romy is unfazed by their bitchiness, and she does not hold back. She tells the trio, "What the hell is your problem? Christy, why are you such a nasty bitch?" A crowd is gathered around the ladies. They all have their pocket popcorn out and murmur, "Ooh." And if we were at Shepherd Middle School like Tamara and I were, there would be sounds of kids yelling, "Fight, fight, fight, fight." Romy continues, "You get some kind of sick pleasure from torturing people? Yeah, me and Michelle made up some lame story, but it's only because we wanted you to treat us like human beings. But you know what I finally realized? I don't care if you like us, because we don't like you. You're a bad person with an ugly heart, and we don't give a flying fuck what you think." And with that, Romy and Michelle strut out, but Christy attempts to throw one more verbal jab at them and says, "They're as delusional about their lives as they are about those outfits." Lisa Luter pushes past Christy and gives her Vogue POV, saying, "I don't know. They have nice lines and a fun, frisky use of color. All in all, I would say they're not bad." Christy tries to rally her A group and says, "Well, we think they're ridiculous, don't we, girls?" But her friends look away quietly and pretend to sip their drinks until Lisa tells her, "Why don't you let them think for themselves?" And when Christy accuses Lisa of being jealous because she's a dried-up businesswoman and the A group are all happily married, Lisa just nods knowingly and says, "Sure, Christy, just keep telling yourself that." The crowd that had gathered push past the A group and crowd around Romy and Michelle, gushing about their outfits. The friends smile, saying they made them 50-50, and then decide they should leave this motherfucking reunion on a high note.
On a high note. But they don't make it outside. Heather stops them at the door and apologizes for blowing their lie and is surprised that the A group made their lives hell because she thought they had it made. Michelle says, "I bet everyone in high school made somebody else's life hell." And Heather doesn't believe it until Toby timidly approaches them and asks, "Heather, since you never got around to it in high school, can you sign my yearbook? And please don't tell me to fuck off because it really hurts my feelings." This bit of information seems to delight Heather, and she tells her, "Go get your fucking book. I'd be glad to sign it."
Aww.
Romy reiterates that they should leave because this reunion can't get any better when Toby runs back in and announces, "Hey, everybody, Sandy Frink just landed in a helicopter." Hold on. There's a helicopter going over right now as we speak. Sandy? Sandy, is that you?
Land, Sandy, land.
Okay, Sandy, we get it.
Maybe it's Sandy Frink coming to get you.
Just drop me some sneakers. I'll be good.
You don't want him to get you a house or anything?
I'm just going to be like, "Hey, I don't know you and you don't know me, but why don't you just buy me a house?"
He's there to get your love with all his monies.
Oh, Lord. Sandy Frink just landed in a helicopter in the movie and outside of my house. He has. There's a huge copter in the parking lot, and Sandy confidently strides into the party. He looks the same, which makes Heather balk, "What the hell was I thinking?" and marveling that she was ever attracted to him. But he also makes Christy swoon, and she grabs his arm, saying, "You look so rich! I mean good!" But Sandy only has eyes for Michelle. Mm-hmm. He beelines it towards her and says, "Michelle, after all these years, you still take my breath away." Michelle says, "Thanks. Wow, you must be like the most successful person in our whole class." Sandy is and rattles off all his impressive possessions and adds, "But there's only one thing I don't have. You, Michelle. Ew. Will you dance with me?"
Yeah. Like, here's all these things I have. House here, house there, cars, yachts, but I don't have you. Oh, so you think you can own me? Great. Super.
Yeah. Super, super hot and romantic.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But Michelle's into it and wants to dance with him only if Romy can dance with him. And he accepts. Sandy takes off his jacket. The girls take off their shoes and the trio do the most banana sauce sandwich choreographed routine.
And I'm pretty sure that Mira Sorvino, who plays Romy, took dance lessons or they body doubled her because she is doing some like pirouettes and spins and her toes are pointed and she's actually got some, this dance is fucking goofy as hell, but she's actually got some really like solid dance skills behind this goofy as hell dance.
Yes. She's the shining star behind the what the fuck dance that's going on. Yeah, if you haven't seen this movie, just do yourself a favor and watch like the little minute and a half routine that they do. And you'll just be like, oh, that's special. Their classmates love it, but Heather doesn't stay to watch. She needs a cig. She ducks outside, and when she can't find a lighter, a pair of hands hold out a lit Zippo to her. It's the tall, dark, and handsome cowboy, still dressed in all black.
Woo, played by Justin Theroux. Hello, hotness.
Was that Justin?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I did not even notice. Oh, holy balls.
Or Colin Farrell Jr.
He apologizes for being a redneck shithead asshole. He explains that he was miserable in high school and barely spoke two words the whole time and has never fucked a sheep or his sister.
Aww.
Heather accepts his light and says snarkily, why, you couldn't catch him? And he says, I deserve that, and asks if she wants to go somewhere quiet and talk. She thinks he's fucking with her and threatens to rip off every appendage he has, starting with his penis. But he's serious. She accepts, and they walk together into the night.
Aww.
Because he looks like Justin Theroux.
Yeah. After the dynamic dance routine, Sandy leads the girls outside. He's gonna prep his chopper to take them home. And Tamara says,
who the fuck's gonna take home the Jaguar? What's Ramon gonna do when Romy gets home in a helicopter and says, oh, Ramon, I'm so sorry. Your Jag is at the Holiday Inn in Tucson, Arizona. Sorry I didn't bring it back.
My hypothesis is that Sandy hired somebody to drive it back or tow it back. Yeah.
Okay.
That's my hypothesis, but I think it's a good question. I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah.
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 While Romy and Michelle are waiting, they hear someone puking in the bushes. Ah, nothing sexier than that. They're surprised to see Billy Christensen sweaty, thicker around the middle, and completely schnockered. He now has a keg instead of a six-pack. Romy says quietly, Billy? He notices her and says, Shebo, talk dirty to me. She informs him her name is Romy. And he asks, were you guys like totally in love with me in high school? Michelle practically cringes and points to Romy saying, she was. She's like, I saw you and your assholery. Yeah. Billy propositions Romy. I've got a hotel room upstairs. Romy is appalled and says, but you're married and you have a family and you're a successful real estate investor. Billy guffaws at this and admits, I do drywall for Christie's dad's company. And this latest baby, I don't even know if it's mine. Romy drinks all this info in just like Billy was drinking at the bar all night long and says decidedly, yes, Billy. While you go up to your room, wash your face because it's wet with vomit. Gross. She continues, take off all your clothes and I'll be there in 5 minutes.
I'd also ask him to brush his teeth. Just
uh-huh,
saying.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Billy practically does a little dance and rushes away. Once he's gone, Romy can't control her snickers and tells Michelle, awooga, awooga. Now he's going to know how it feels to wait and wait. Much like that prom dance. Sandy calls them over. The chopper's ready. And as the friends walk towards it, Romy says, I can't believe we're going home in a chopper. Romy says, I can't believe we're going home in a chopper. This is so cool. I only wish everyone could see us lift off. Romy climbs inside the Fool's Rush In-sized helicopter, which means that it's not just like a four-seater. It's like for a whole gang of people, but there's only the helicopter pilot and then three other people in there. So, yay team. Maybe there's a manservant in there, you know, prepping the drinks or whatever. I don't know. But Michelle stops in front of Sandy and they kiss. And it's not a good one.
And it reminds me of a few of the bad kisses I've had on recent dates. No, no.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great.
No, it kind of made me throw up a little in my mouth. I was like, ah, no. And then Michelle remarks, I'm so glad that you don't have your folder in front of you. Because apparently Sandy is well endowed. At least he has that going for him.
That and millions of dollars.
Yes. Yep. They all pile into the helicopter. Then the trio lifts off in the copter as Belinda Carlisle sings. Ooh, baby, do you know what that's worth? Ooh, heaven is a place on earth. They say in heaven, love comes first. Ooh, baby, heaven is a place on earth. Ooh, heaven is a place on earth.
That is why I didn't add all the wonderful banger songs from the 80s, because I knew Corinne would sing them. A lengthy rendition.
Lengthy?
I just don't have time.
Oh, I could have sang more. I could have sang more.
I know you could have. I know.
This plays in inexplicably. All the Sagebrush reunion attendees file out of the hotel to watch them fly away. Romy and Michelle, who are now in their own heaven on earth, wave. And with a bird's eye view, they see Christy Masters roaming around outside the venue, angrily screaming, Billy, where are you? Before her dress flips up, revealing her granny panties from the air from all of the helicopter. I was going to say wings. Whatever. Blades. Helicopter blades. Yes, that. A little further up, they see Heather and the dark cowboy making out furiously in the field and cheer her on. Woo, get it, girl. Then we cut to 6 months later. Romy and Michelle have opened up their own boutique on Rodeo Drive called Romy and Michelle's. Profound name. I don't know. How did they come up with it?
They just looked at each other and said, Romy, what should we name it? And she looked at her and said, Michelle, I don't know. The little hamster wheel got going in their heads and they said, Romy and Michelle's. Yes.
Although, you know, we could have named our podcast Tamara and Corinne.
Then everybody would mispronounce it.
And they would misspell
either say Tamara and Karen's or Karen and Tamara or Tamara. Is it Tamara or Tamara? Karen? Corinne.
Yeah.
Corinne.
Corina.
No.
Yes.
That's, yeah. No. All day long.
No. And nobody would know how to spell it. So then nobody would be able to find us. One Dry Kiss is much easier to spell. And it's got three words in it, just like, you know, the three words I say to you. I mean, swear to you. The three words I swear to you. When you breathe, I want to be the air for you. Just like One Dry Kiss. So the place is bustling. And Michelle says, I can't believe we've been so busy. Maybe we can pay Sandy back that loan this week. Romy looks at her friend and sweetly says, I think we're about 2 years from that. Heather is there too, buying a dress from their store that's surprisingly not black. It's actually super cute white dress with lemons on it and spaghetti straps. I would wear that dress in a motherfucking heartbeat. I know this shocks you, Tam.
No.
And they kind of force her to buy it because they're like, you burn it, you buy it. By the way, do you know that cigarettes are bad for your health? They actually say that. I love that. And the dynamic duo have fulfilled their dream of gifting happiness to the masses and Heather with fashion. And we do not mention Sandy other than him loaning them money. So I think Sandy does not have Michelle as his possession. But the movie closes with Romy telling her bestie, I think you're the funnest person I know. And Michelle answering, oh yeah, me too, but with you. And they happily fold scarves and live happily ever motherfucking after. The end. So, Miss Tamara, how many dry kisses do you give Romy and Michelle's high school reunion?
Well, let's first run down the ratings. If it's one dry kiss, that means do not watch. Two dry kisses means if you only had three channels, you might watch it for a while before changing to an infomercial and then inadvertently buy yourself knives and then feel guilty, particularly when they don't cut a can as advertised. So many regrets. Three dry kisses is, yay, would kiss this movie again. Four dry kisses, the date night you've been waiting for. And five dry kisses is, if this movie were life, you'd have gotten dressed by a cute cartoon animal, some squirrels, immaculately washed your dishes, and you rode to work on a unicorn.
Yay.
I give this movie a solid three dry kisses.
Ooh.
I used to love this movie.
Uh-huh.
It was like one of my faves in my rotation. And as you started, as you appreciated it more than you did back in the day, I kind of like, Michelle, okay, so you hate Sandy and you treat him like shit your whole life, and then you find out he has money and all of a sudden he's appealing.
Right.
That's a great look on you. Uh-huh. That's real, real great.
Yeah.
So, like, their happily ever after is like, wonk, wonk, wonk. I'm glad they got their boutique. I'm glad they got, you know, their dreams fulfilled, but it seems like they're just using poor Sandy Frink.
Yes.
He's the means to an end, and I just don't like it. I do, however, love the fact that they went off on Christy Masters and the A group. That's, like, by far my favorite, like, fuck you moment. Uh-huh. And I like to think secretly that Heather is, like, their BFF, their surly new BFF, because she's over there, like, buying clothes that she does not want. You know, she probably would never set foot in the store, but it seems like she's got an affection for Romy and Michelle and is probably hanging out around their place quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a cute story. I found it entertaining, but that one glaring thing, just like, oh, yeah. And now that I knew that they were sex workers, kind of puts a whole new spin on it. So maybe I need to watch it again with new eyes and be more open-minded.
They aspired to be sex workers. They didn't.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. See, you didn't tell me that. I don't want to watch that other movie to find out. So I'm just going to rely on you to watch it and give me the Cliff Notes version.
Oh, it's going to be very exciting.
How many dry kisses do you give it, Corinne?
I am very much surprising myself and giving this 4 dry kisses.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So when I initially watched it, I didn't like Romy and Michelle very much. I still actually don't like Romy and Michelle very much. And
yet you give it a 4 with the whole movie's about them.
I find that they do have some likable sides to them. However, the issues that you pointed out, I completely agree with in regards to their flawed personalities, because we all have our flaws in a personality. But using lovely Sandy Frink, not so wild about that. Also, they were kind of mean girls to other people. Also, not so wild about that. However, it has this really lovely arc, a couple of really lovely arcs. One where they start off feeling potentially like their life is kind of lackluster. And at the reunion, they really own their life, which love. The whole scene where Michelle is like, you know what? We had a great time in high school. We had such a good time together. Like, I feel like the way they are friends together, a little bit creepy, yes, but also it's really beautiful in this movie how they are there for each other and how their friendship evolves over the movie as well. So it had a couple of aspects that I thought were really touching and really beautiful. And I liked a few of the arcs around their growth as people throughout this movie. So 4 motherfucking dry kisses. Yes.
I also loved Heather's storyline, too.
Yes, 100%.
That's why I included so much of it. Because I was like, oh, I don't know what happens to Heather, too. Because Heather, like, she gets it, girl. She gets it.
And the one thing that you complained about in another movie where they did give this and such happened to this person and this and such happened to this person, but you wanted more details. I wanted a little, besides, like, the 6 months later thing, I wanted Sandy Frink went on to blah-de-blah and Heather Mooney made her next billions off of creating anti-smoking gum or something like that. Whatever.
A nicotine patch that cured your cravings in half the time.
Exactly. Yes! Yes! Tamara's way better at this than I am. So now.
So 3 and 4 dry kisses, yes, respectively.
Yes. Let's move on to the 4 Musketeers of Diversity. Wow. So many musketeers showing up to the table in this one, huh? Huh?
I mean, body diversity, there was Toby, but then again, they did call Romy fat when she absolutely was not fat. And they harped on the diet culture, so I'm going to say they get like maybe half a representation for body diversity.
Yes. Yeah, and Cameron Manheim was the only person I would say who had any kind of a less than sort of stick figure body in the movie. So, not really there.
Sexual diversity was the two drama guys that made eyes at each other in the photo. So like a millisecond of sexual representation.
I suggest that what's her name, if the Vogue lady, was a lesbian. And I also postulate that Romy and Michelle are ace.
Okay. All right.
But okay. None of that is explicitly stated regardless.
No.
So we have a shoe of sexual diversity. Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, this movie was so racially diverse. I mean,
I want to give a minus one for racial diversity because yes. The representation were the mechanics in the car, the Jaguar dealership.
Yeah.
And Ramon was quintessential. Romy, you're looking good today. Yeah. Oh, you know what I want. Like, he was the smarmy Mexican slimy guy. And I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah, I couldn't bring myself to do the accent. I was like, no, I can't. Yeah.
Yep. And then there was Michelle at the class reunion at one point was talking to a bunch of foreign exchange students that were just looking at her because they were trying to, I guess, imply that they didn't know what the heck she was saying because they were just like standing there staring at her.
Yeah, which gets it even more negative thing because it's like, okay, so you're here for the 10-year reunion and you don't know the language? That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Disability representation.
No.
Yeah. Correct.
No.
So we have like a shoe.
Cobbled together Frankenstein style. We've got like a quarter of one.
Musketeer showing up to the table. Yeah.
Quarter of. Yeah. Very unique. Held together with spit and glue, and if you breathe too hard, it's going to fall apart. So just trust us on this one.
Yeah, just kind of squint and look from a distance. Yeah,
or don't look at them direct.
Yeah.
So I had a suggestion, Corinne, and I don't know if you saw it, but I wanted to put some specific to this movie grab bag questions.
Fantastic.
And I was wondering if any of these grab bag questions that I listed out for you piqued your interest or if you were interested in answering all or any of them.
Oh, let's just do this for our grab bag. Yeah, let's do it. All right. Romy in the movie said she loved Hamburger Day, but it got cut. And I kind of mentioned it, though. What was your favorite high school lunch?
Oh, you have to answer first. It's your grab bag question.
Oh, okay. I am answering. So a lot of people had cafeterias at their school. We did not have cafeterias at my school. We had
like a lunch counter.
Yeah, we had
outdoor seating.
Exactly. Yeah, we had just like an open quad kind of area. California, baby, right? And there was sort of like a counter where you could order a few things. There was places where you could get school lunch, but nobody got school lunch. And then there were like a few vending machines that had like, you know, ho-hos and sodas and stuff like that. Really good quality things, chips. My all-time favorite thing to get, which I would get for a buck, was a giant egg roll.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, my God.
It was so good. I would get that. And then we had this weird drink machine where you could put in, like, some change. And a plastic cup would drop down. Some, like, of the best kind of ice would drop into it. And then it would pour your selected beverage into it. It was old. It was, like, from the 70s or something. It was strange, but it worked. And and I would get myself a little plastic cup of Pepsi, and I would have my fucking delicious egg roll, and I'd just be like, I would be good. What about you?
I know I said it before in a few episodes where my friends and I were on the lower end of the income spectrum, so we all had our free lunch tickets. Mm. And we traded them like baseball cards. Like, ooh, somebody didn't have their ticket one day, so you'd have to give her one of yours. Therefore, you're out two. But then 2 weeks later, when you needed one, they would swap back and forth. Right. And we'd all be like, who's lunch? Who's it? And the really good stuff, your lunch tickets weren't good for. So, like, they had, like, really choice stuff, which I can't remember. My high school years were a blur. But this question did really sear into my mind or brought out a very hidden, buried memory that I remember. I hung out with a group of girls, and one of them was my very good friend, Patty, who was my very good friend until I dated her boyfriend shortly after she broke up with him, which made our friend group a little bit tense. And so when my friend Dana that I hung out with in middle school transferred into Piedmont, I was like, oh my God. And I stuck to her like Velcro. I'm like, yes, I have a new friend group. And one afternoon, her, me, and her two friends that I just were friends by association for mm-hmm. me, Melanie and Kim, were sitting around on the concrete having lunch. I don't think I had lunch that day. And Melanie's mom brought her a Subway sandwich.
Oh.
And it had like the oil and vinegar, which I never had before mm-hmm. on a sandwich. I don't think I ever had a Subway sandwich up until that point, if I'm going to be honest. And so she was like sitting there eating it. And I must have been like salivating at the mouth because she's like, do you want a bite? And I'm like, yeah. And I think without even realizing it, like I chomped down 3 bites of it. And she was like, can you leave some for me, please? And I was like, oh, dear God, I am so sorry. And I handed it back to her. And I just remember that was like the most delicious thing I had ever tasted in my life in that moment was a stupid Subway sandwich, like a cold cut trio with oil and vinegar, salt and pepper. And I know it wasn't like a high school lunch that my high school provided, but uh-huh. I did eat that lunch kind of sort of somebody else's at high school. So it counts. Oh, those food memories that just poke out of your memory. Mm-hmm. Your food memories that just poke out of your mind. Yep, that sounds better. I'll go all with right. that one.
So what's your grab bag topic question that you're going for?
Did you go to your 10-year high school reunion?
No. There we go. Done.
Neither did I. I said before that I blocked out my high school years, and there's a good reason. Oh, very, very tough time growing up. And then inexplicably, I went to Piedmont Hills for 2 years and then at 16 moved to the Central Valley. Surprise, you're living in Fresno now, where I went to McLean High School. My McLean High School experience was a lot better because I had a stable life situation. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I wanted a Piedmont Hills High School yearbook so bad. Begged my dad for one. He was like, nope, not going to get one. And because I don't have those visual references,
yeah.
like I forgot everybody. Uh-huh. Like I see people and somebody will be like, you know them. They blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, So I wouldn't want to go back to my Piedmont reunion because I would just be like, I don't know who any of you people are.
Yeah, but I think of McLean more as the high school that you went to.
Yeah, but I also wouldn't go to that one because I want to say that we're kind of drag ass because when I went to McLean, I worked at the office for, I think, both the years that I went there. It was uh-huh. like a extracurricular credit or whatever. And we would constantly get calls from people that were like, hey, do you guys have any news about the class of blah, blah, reunion? Uh-huh. No, sorry. Hey, do you have any, we would constantly get calls and nobody planned anything ever there. Uh-huh. And my class was no exception because yeah. I have not seen hide nor hair of any sort of thing around a reunion. I'm okay with that.
I saw hide nor hair of any kind of a reunion either. So samesies, 20.
Wee.
But I didn't even go to my high school prom because I was like, I don't have any friends. I don't have a date. No, because the guy that I was dating joined the Navy. I was very pissed at him. So he could not take me to the prom. Fuck off.
You know what I have to say about that?
Huh?
Young men. Oh, no, that's the YMCA, not in the Navy. In the Navy. In the Navy.
All right. So, Miss Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we're doing Earth Girls Are Easy. Oh, holy. Jeff Goldblum getting it on with Gina Davis. Uh-huh.
And they start all off right. with fur and they're shaved all down and Jim Carrey's in that. And
oh my God, I forgot Jim Carrey's yeah. in that.
As well as Damon Wayans.
Okay. Wow. Star-studded cast.
I was trying to figure out like a diverse-ish one of that and that was the best I could come up with under that theme.
That definitely has some aliens in it.
Aliens?
Are they illegal? No, they're from space.
And the theme is, these movies may make you go, what the fuck?
Yeah, for the month of May.
Yes.
The movies that may make you go, what the?
And this movie has Jeff Goldblum, Jim Carrey, Damon Wayans, Julie Brown. So this is going to be a super exciting blast from the past, which may be totally politically incorrect and completely wrong. I haven't seen it since basically high school. So, if you have anything you'd like to say about Romy and Michelle's high school reunion, Earth Girls Are Easy, our new theme, our old theme, you can reach out to us via email at onedrykiss@gmail.com or via the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, X, and Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time.
I was like, I lost my faith in humanity that day.
For real. I have never heard that story before, and I am outraged. Outraged.
Well, hence my aversion to laundromats. Anyways.
I'm sorry. I really got to go to the bathroom. It just hit me very suddenly.
This is the crucial part, Corinne. Put your legs together. Press them together.
Ooh, I gotta go. I gotta go.
I'm not telling you how it ends now. May I continue?
Yes, you may. Oh.